Now it's time for the Southern Cross.
Yes, it is now time for our Southern Cross segment, and we're joined in studio by Pacific Media Watch's director David Roby and contributing editor Sri Krishnamurti. The topics we're discussing today are a recent webinar on the bombing of the Rainbow Warrior 35 years on, COVID-19 in Papua New Guinea, and also Papua New Guinea's biggest drug heist in history. But let's start with the Rainbow Warrior. We've spoken about the Rainbow Warrior quite a lot on this segment. The 30th anniversary of the bombing was on the 10th of July last month, and last Thursday there was a webinar discussing it. What about what happened is still relevant today?
Well, basically, this webinar was bringing together quite a few people that were involved at the time of the bombing of the Rainbow Warrior, but it was actually organised by H France, which is an organisation devoted to researching history, French history and so on, and it was coordinated by Roxanne Panchasi from Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, and the whole idea was to sort of look at, you know, well, what are the consequences long term relationship between France and New Zealand, but there was a sudden change because just before the program came on, we had the honour of being joined by the former president of the territorial government of Tahiti, Oscar Tamalolu, who's an amazingly charismatic character and one of the champions of media, well, sort of the campaigns against nuclear testing and for French decolonization in Tahiti and so on. So he was introduced into the program as a guest, and it was tremendous to have him. He was the person responsible for getting the United Nations to re-enlist Tahiti on the decolonization list of countries. So
you just mentioned how you discussed the long-term effects caused by the French nuclear testing in the Pacific. What have they been like politically and also health-wise?
Well, the interesting thing is that this is very much an ongoing story you know, for this whole saga of the Rainbow Warrior, although it's surprisingly it's dropped off the kind of a little bit in New Zealand, you know, but elsewhere around the region, and particularly in Tahiti, because you see, 30 years of nuclear tests, 193 nuclear tests that took part there, and well over 40 of them were atmospheric. And so the Tahitians that were involved working on Mororo and Whangatawha, where the tests actually happened and so on, and their children and so on, there's a legacy of terrible effects from nuclear testing. And so these families and the individuals are suing the French government for compensation.
Are these
so
health effects?
Oh, major health effects and so on. Because France insisted through the years that unlike the British and American tests in the Pacific, the French ones were clean, quote unquote,
right,
sort of thing. But no one really accepted that at the time. But one of the leaders in the French, the French Polynesian, the Tahitian government a couple of years ago admitted, well, we're actually been lying to Tahitians all these years, and in fact the health impact has been quite serious.
So Sri, you mentioned just before what will happen to the Marshall Islands and Rooney after these
tests, and especially with the degeneration of the domes that contain these nuclear materials. I wondered what was going to happen to that, and how will it contaminate the Pacific?
Right, so the materials that I imagine were used during the testing at the time.
Yes, and that was quite a few years before the French test. So that was 1940s, 1950s, and so on. And pretty massive, all of them atmospheric or in shafts on the atolls and so on. This particular issue didn't really come up in this long webinar that we had, because we mostly dealt with the French nuclear tests and the Rainbow Warrior and so on. But the Rainbow Warrior had actually been in Marshall Islands leading up to the bombing, you see, and I was on board, and of course, and we had four voyages to take the Rongelap Islanders onto another atoll, because they were affected by nuclear tests, and then they were mostly, some of them had gone back to Rongelap, and they've built an airstrip on it, and so the government, the US government, has tried to sort of compensate compensate by, you know, giving handouts, much more funding and so on for the people. But what Sri's mentioning is Runit, which is the domes, Bikini Atoll and various others, that where a lot of the nuclear waste was actually just simply put in the pits that were left from the nuclear tests and then just concreted over. And of course they're cracking up, and for climate change it's a sort of a big issue now. And I think a film that was made by John Pilger a couple of years ago called The Coming War on China, where he sort of had a whole segment of that film devoted to what was happening with Runit and the legacy from nuclear testing by the US in the Marshall Islands. So there's a major problem still in the Pacific from nuclear testing.
Now, France still uses nuclear energy. Do you know how their testing methods have changed at all since the bombing of the Rainbow Warrior?
Mostly these days, everything's simulated. It's all computerised. You know, that happened. I mean, France stopped testing it made the decision to stop in 1995, and the last test was early in 1996. And so from then on, it's all been computerised and so on. But the damage and the health legacy remains.
Let's move on.
Just before that, David. Oh, yeah. David wanted to talk about the media coverage of. Of the issue, the 35th anniversary.
Right. Just because we are quite short for time, let's move now to the other topic, yep. COVID-19 okay. In Papua New Guinea. So cases in Papua New Guinea are continuing to rise. How does Papua New Guinea's experience with the virus compare to other nations in the Pacific? Why are we seeing such a rise here?
They don't seem to be using as much PPEs as other countries do.
Right.
And they are pretty lax in the border controls, I think. Generally, it's generally been relaxed.
Mm.
Yeah.
And healthcare workers have been named as a concern there.
That's because of the lack of PPEs, and they don't seem to be taking it very, very seriously.
Is that the government, and there isn't enough funding for PPE, or?
The government should have funding for PPEs.
Right.
Most of the PPEs are imported from China.
Okay.
And that could be a problem.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it's potentially international relations with China that's stopping the PPE from being imported, or?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it just seems to be the Papua New Guinea government doesn't seem to be talking to China as much as they should.
Right. So also in Papua New Guinea, there has been a recent drug heist, which has been named the biggest drug heist in the history of Papua New Guinea. This is quite a big story. Why has it been making headlines?
750 kilograms of kilograms of cocaine.
Oh, my gosh.
And a mysterious plane crash flown by a bloke called David Cutmore, who is 52, is from Melbourne.
Right. So there were drugs on the plane. The plane crashed. Do we know anything about why the plane crashed?
No, we don't.
I can come in on
that one. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Come in, David.
No, we've just published a story just a few minutes ago, actually just before we came into the studio.
Oh, wow.
The police minister, Brian Kramer, came out with a statement sort of explaining a lot of the background to what happened. Because when the plane crashed was a week ago now, Sunday week ago. First of all, the pilot flew illegally into the country, of course. No passport, anything, and flew at 3,000 metres, which is illegal, very, very low, to try and avoid any kind of surveillance, but got there right, and a makeshift clearing had sort of been cut in the bush for the plane to land. But of course, I don't think the pilot or the syndicate back in Australia realised how much the weight and so on of the drugs was. When it was loaded in, it crashed when it actually tried to take off. And so the pilot then gave himself, he went off into the bush and hid, but actually gave himself up. It's an incredible saga.
Yeah.
Even the plane itself is registered to a dead man.
Oh, well. My goodness.
But as you think, why isn't this making headlines in Australia?
Absolutely.
Well, it is in Australia, but not so much here. But it's an incredible story.
Now, the pilot is Australian. Do you know how the international relations between Australia and Papua New Guinea could affect the sentencing for those involved?
Absolutely. In fact, I mean, that's the big issue at the moment, because there's a lot of, on social media, there's a lot of protests because the pilot appeared in court and was sent, was convicted for illegal entry into the country and was sentenced to 3,000 kina, which is, you know, slap on the wrist sort of thing.
Right.
The reason for this was because at that stage they didn't actually have any evidence of the drug heist. So what has happened is he's now been, you know, because under immigration laws, there was no release on bail, and so he was taken to Bamana, prison, and now of course they'll slap all these other charges on him as well. But the Papua New Guineans wanted, I mean, many were complaining, well, why is this, like, he's only just got off with this? No, but the real reason is because under PNG law, the maximum they can get under drug laws is 2 years, but in Australia it's a life sentence.
Right.
And so the Australians want this guy back in Australia where he'll face the full weight of the law and very heavy penalties. And the thing is, it's a major syndicate based in Melbourne, but five people have been arrested in Australia, Queensland and Victoria, and they're still investigating. They had been investigating for a couple of years, and they're actually monitoring the flight as it travelled to PNG. So quite extraordinary story. I mean, $200 million, you know, street value. I mean, like, sorry, 200 million kina, which is 80 million Australian.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yeah. Right, well, we'll have to wrap up there for the sake of time, but thank you both very much for coming in today. All right, that was Southern Cross.
That was the Southern Cross.